This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 26th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Can you hear the waves?
I've been hearing the waves for months. Just be happy that we're actually out there on the high seas here pretty soon. So.
Although, you know, it is the Gulf of Mexico. I don't know if it's really high sea. I think you're right in the middle. You could probably still jump off the ship and touch bottom, but...
That's true. Well, certainly, folks have noticed the show is up early this week because we are on the Ante Up Poker Cruise.
Woo! I'm losing my buy-in right now!
Yes, exactly. I wonder which one of us is down more right now.
Definitely me.
But next week's show, of course, we'll fill you all in on all the fun that all you guys missed out because you didn't want to come on the cruise.
And even the ones who did come on the cruise, we're going to fill them in too.
Yeah, because they can't be around everywhere. So there's going to be stuff that they didn't hear, right?
Absolutely. They're not going to know about the fights that you and I have at the dinner table or, you know, whatever. So.
But you had a you get into travel mode too, Chris, right? You had a little weird trip to get you going, right?
Yeah, you know, I thought to myself, Scott always goes and travels and has these stories, and I thought, damn it all, I'm going to go on a trip, and I'm going to have a funny story to tell, and it's not going to be poker-related. But at the end of the trip, something happened to make it poker-related.
Oh, so, excellent.
So I have to tell the story now. I have to.
It's your show. I mean, you're allowed to tell the stories you want.
Have you ever watched the show Man vs. Food with Adam Richman?
You know, I have not, but I have heard about it from so many people that I feel like I'm an executive producer on the show.
Well, he's gone to like all these incredible places, and it started out as a show where he would just go and see this big food element and try to eat it, whatever. But then they started making these like challenges for him and mystery challenges. And apparently there is this place. He went to three of them. I mean, he did a Sarasota, Florida show.
And excellent.
One of the places was called Munchie's 420 Cafe, which for our non-hemp smoking fans, 420 is like the lingo for pot smokers. And there's a lot of explanations of what 420 means. But we're not going to get into that now.
That's right. A totally different show.
But yeah, but there's this place down there that he visited, and they had this unbelievable sandwich, and it was, they were all these great sandwiches. This one was called a Fat Sandy, okay, and we all had one. I went there with my stepsons. One of them came in from out of town, and my other one who lives here now. We all went down and drove down an hour to go to this place. And I won't describe the sandwich, but let's just say it had every food group represented in it, okay?
Yes.
But the reason we went there was because my stepson, Matt, in Connecticut, he's big on eating spicy foods. And so whenever we're traveling or whatever, we always try to find something that's so spicy that he says, whoa, I can't eat it, you know? Well, on this show, they had the spicy wing challenge, and it was called Fire in Your Hole Wings. Okay? And now this guy, this Adam Richman guy, he can eat anything, and he's eaten the hottest stuff, like, known to man, and actually finished it all. So they really, really wanted to make this guy suffer. So it was a
10... inside, right?
Yeah, exactly. And this was a 10-wing challenge, 10 wings. And
oh, 10 wings?
He couldn't even eat two. It was so hot. Okay? Now this guy can eat anything. So we drove an hour to this place so that my stepson Matt could try to eat these things. It was like $9 for these 10 wings. And so we get there and we're psyching him up, you know. We're like, "Come on, Matt. Come on. You're going to do this. You can do this. I can't wait. I'm trying to find a thing that, you know, that you can eat that's too spicy." And he's like, "I don't know, you know." And he's getting all nervous. And I'm like, "Come on." So finally we psych him up. He's like, "All right, we're going to get a fat Sandy sandwich, and then we're going to get the wings." And he's like, "All right, let's do it." We go up to the counter, and the lady's like, "Can I help you?" "Yeah, we want three fat Sandies, and this boy right here is going to do the challenge." She says, "Oh, sorry, guys. We don't have the stuff today." I said, "What?
Oh, no.
What do you mean you don't have the stuff? It's Saturday. It's what your whole place is world famous for." I had someone fly in from Connecticut, and then we drove an hour. And it's like, you know, the place doesn't open up until 4:20 because
right.
it's munchies.
Yeah, that's cute.
Right, and it closes at 4:20 a.m. And so I'm like, how do you not have this stuff?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say somebody was using the 4:20 and forgot to place the order.
We were so pissed off. I mean, how can you travel, first of all, 1,300 miles by air and then an hour by car, and you tell me on your busiest day of the week that you don't have this stuff at the time you're opening up? So she says, "Oh, well, our driver, we're going to try to convince our driver to go get it, but it'll be a couple hours." And I thought, "Oh, okay, it'll be a couple hours before the marijuana leaves his system." That's why he'll be willing to get in the car and drive to wherever it is to get this stuff to make these wings. So we were ticked off. So we're like, "All right, fine, give us the second hottest wings that you have, and let's see if he can do that." And of course he ate them all, and there was no problem. And so we were disappointed, but as I was leaving, they had all this cool stuff on. You could tell it was like, they had like bumper stickers all over the wall, funny sayings and all this funny stuff. You know, some was risque and whatever. It was kind of funny. But they had this one bumper sticker, Scott, that I thought of you, and it was poker related.
Oh, excellent.
And it said this. It said, "There are three types of people in this world. Those who can do math, and those who can't." That is like the funniest sticker I have ever seen.
I am clearly in the can't category.
And so is the guy who invented the sticker. I mean, that's just classic freaking humor there. For, and it applies to poker. You know, and we talked about that whole math thing last week, and we got somebody calling in about that a little bit. But while I had my family in town, we played a lot of poker because my stepson likes to play, and my future son-in-law likes to play, and my other stepson likes to play. So we had a lot of tournaments all week. And as we were playing, I started to come up with my own poker profiling system.
Excellent. This is like the Werby system?
No, it's like the Helmut system.
Oh, okay.
You know, Helmuth has the mouse and the eagle and all these other things to categorize players. Well, I play against these players here, and I've come up with my own names for them, and I'm copywriting it right on this show.
Okay.
Now, the show says it's March 26th, but we're actually taping on March 24th, so I don't want anybody saying they came up with it on the 25th of March 2010, because it's not true. I've come up with this. I'm copywriting it. Don't use it for your book.
I am reasonably sure that no one is going to want to plagiarize anything Chris Cosenza comes up with. Sorry, buddy.
All right. Well, here are the categories, and these are the players I played with.
Okay.
The first one was I'm calling the artist. Now, whenever you see somebody that likes to draw in poker, call them the artist. So now,
also,
when you see
people missing an ear,
or if they have no ear, that's very good.
Yeah, thanks. So, you know, I'm a professional podcaster.
Of course, if they die, the value of their stack doubles.
That is true. That is true.
All right. So the artist, we had somebody in my family who's the artist. The kid just draws no matter what. You know he's going for the draw every time. He likes to play connectors, whatever. So whenever you see somebody that you've played against who you know likes to draw a lot, call him the artist, and you'll be able to recognize him right away what he does. The next one is the telemarketer. Can you understand?
The telemarketer. All right.
People who make a lot of calls. They love to call. Instead of calling station, which is so cliche now, say, oh, man, he was a real telemarketer.
Excellent. And, you know, and they probably make a lot of cold calls, too.
Hey, don't get me started with all those TV shows about cold cases and cold calls. But, right, cold calls, telemarketers. Exactly. Anybody who calls, if they call cold call three bets, you know, then you know they're a diehard telemarketer. Now, I've got the medium. The medium. These are people who like to raise things. They like to raise things. They like to raise a lot.
All right. So they're trying to reach, you know, Ronnie Reagan and stuff.
Exactly.
You know, the other world.
Exactly. Seances. If you like to raise a lot, think of them as some clairvoyant medium. The next one, the French soldier.
Wow. They all right. I want to see where I got to go with this one.
They fold under any kind of pressure.
Oh!
Now, in case we offend some French listeners, which I'm not aware of any of our French listeners.
I'm sure we did, so.
You can call them the dry cleaner, because they fold clothes and put them in boxes. Or you can call them the paper airplane designer.
All right, I kind of like the creativity of that, but it it might have to shorten it to PAD.
Yeah, call them pads.
Yeah.
That guy's a real pad.
Dry cleaner's probably better.
Okay, so one of those three, but, you know. All right. For emphasis of the book, we'll stick with one for now. Then there's the hunter. Can you figure out why I want to call somebody the hunter?
You know what? I can't.
Neither can I. I wrote this down yesterday, and now I can't remember what it was.
You cannot remember.
No, I'm just kidding.
Profile system is out the... you're setting up yourself for a sequel book now. If you like this... Read volume 2, where I describe the hunter after I remember what it was.
The hunter is somebody who likes to attack. It's people who like to they like to attack blinds. They like to attack you. They like to attack the pot. This is somebody who like to hunt. They hunt for situations where they know that they can attack and certain win. So they're looking for weak people who are wounded. You know, like when the gazelles run by and the cheetah wounds one, and then it's easy to land them later. Well, that's the hunter. People like to attack the weaker players.
That's what we do in this partnership. You know, one of us throws out an idea, and the other one improves upon it. So I'm going to help you out here because I want this to be extremely successful. I think the hunter, bad name.
Okay, what do you want to call it?
I would go with either maybe the predator. It's got that more, you know, forceful kind of hawk coming down and squeezing the mouse kind of feel to it.
Okay.
Or Dick Cheney.
Dick Cheney. Oh, let's not get political.
He's a hunter, right?
Yeah, I know.
Not a very good one, but he is.
He shoots his friends, but... All right, and my last...
Politics.
My last category, the stuntman.
All right.
This replaces the cliche maniac. These are guys who love to take chances, have no regard for the health of their stack. They just want to go out there and take crazy chances on things, and they're the stuntman. So you got the artist, the telemarketer, the medium, the French soldier, a.k.a. dry cleaner, pad, hunter, a.k.a. predator, Dick Cheney, and the stuntman. You can even, you know, call him Lee Majors if you want.
Yeah, no, I'm going to call him a Gruber.
Gruber?
The Gruber.
The Gruber.
Oh, my God. Mac Gruber. So you're one of the smart people that have given up on Saturday Night Live years ago. The rest of us still suffer through it every Saturday night, though I'm down to like only about 7 minutes and 36 seconds. But, you know, MacGruber, like MacGyver.
I saw it. I know what it is.
Supposedly funnier, but it's not.
I remember watching it. I saw the clip. Anyway, that's my system. That's my story of non-pokerness. And we'll see where it goes from here.
All right.
I did allude to the feedback we got from someone about that math versus verbal thing.
Yes, you did.
It was Gundam Poker. I love when he calls, so he always calls, hey, it's Gundam Poker again. So let's listen.
Man's got a lot to say.
Let's listen to what he has to say.
Hey, this is Gundam Poker again about the math versus non-math comments. I just wanted to say I really do think that everything is really – ultimately a math decision. It's just that you just have to weigh, you know, like if you have a read on somebody, you still put a probability of how correct you are, and you throw that into the equation. So even if you're usually would would call, but you're, you know, just 100% sure, let's say 95% sure you're beat, then you have to, you know, you look at the percentage of the pot versus the 5%. It's still based on a read, but ultimately, you know, it ends up, you know, where you make decisions weighted on mathematics. Now, some people don't calculate them, and it's done kind of like with the neural net in their brain. But it's still, I really do still think that it's fundamentally math.
I don't know. I don't know if it's all math. I don't know if I agree with that.
You know, okay, I'm not pimping for the forum here, but this is just, I made a post today. Because we have an ongoing discussion about this on the forum now at aneatmagazine.com/forum. And I've told Gundam and our good friend Rant, they make my day every day. I wake up and I race back to the computer to see the newest episode from the Gundam and Rant poker show. Because these guys are so intense on their beliefs that I don't think they really understand what I'm saying. And it's hilarious to see them, and it's not really an kind of thing. It's just me throwing out silly things to talk about.
Well, you know what's funny is they're math guys, yet they're very verbal with their arguments.
Exactly. See? So it does prove that they do both things.
That's right.
Which I never said that they didn't, or anybody else didn't. I was just making a point. But you know, I'll give Gundam a point on this one. You know, obviously there's binary. Everything could be, you know, delineated down to zeros and ones.
All right? Right.
But again, the idea of this was just, you know, some of us favor one, some of us favor the other, and it all depends on our occupation. Doesn't mean one's better, one's worse. Doesn't mean that people can't do both or they don't do both. It just, you know, you favor one, you favor the other. That's it. Please.
I mean,
please understand.
You know, really, if you're going to keep reducing things down to the basic, we're just walking bags of water, right? I mean...
Don't go there. Now we're going to get into
so
this whole, whole thing on the forum about how we're not all water. We're only 98% water, and oh my gosh, so...
We're carbon life forms. So now math is not just... It's not just math and verbal. I mean, it's also science. All right, well, we got some housekeeping to touch on before we move on. Our fantastically edited Annie Up Poker Show that we did on television for the Chad Brown No Limit Hold'em tournament in Jacksonville is going to debut this Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Bright House Sports Network. And it's going to be called the Windy City Poker Championship. I guess they haven't updated their little descriptions for the actual event, but... It's also going to air later on Cox Cable in Louisiana and Comcast in Chicago. Plus, it'll be posted on the web, right?
Yeah, as soon as we get a copy, we'll pop it up on aneatmagazine.com and let folks know that they can go watch it there. But, you know, hey, watch it on TV if you can. You know, get those ratings so they keep coming back and wanting us to do more, right?
Yeah, I got my TiVo all set to tape all the copies. No matter how many times it shows up, it's taping.
Excellent. And then, of course, noon on Saturday is Apes, Pot Limit Omaha. So good luck to all those folks. We'll obviously be on the cruise at that point, hanging out in Cozumel. Yeah, not sure what I'm doing yet. I think I'm going to do a tequila tasting tour, Chris. I'm guessing you're not going to join me.
I don't think I'm going to taste any tequila, but we may actually get off the ship this time. And the whole
say it's not true.
The whole reason I'm getting off the ship is because my mom told me not to. My mom said, don't get off the ship. And I said, what are you talking about? Oh, they're closing the borders of Mexico and... They're killing people, and I'm like, what? So I got to go see this for myself.
Did you remind your mom that Cozumel isn't Mexico, it's really United States?
Yeah, I tried to make her understand that it's a tourist.
And to my point, too, I was researching shore excursions last week, getting all excited, right?
Yeah.
Go to the Royal Caribbean website, I click on, where are you going? And I click on Mexico, right? Cozumel doesn't show up. I'm like, what? What am I doing wrong? Maybe it's my Firefox. Maybe I should look on Internet Explorer. And then I click on Caribbean. Boom, there's Cozumel. So even Royal Caribbean doesn't consider it Mexico.
Yeah. I
go there every day.
I don't consider it Mexico either.
But again, that's noon Eastern. That's Pot Limit Omaha on Saturday. And then the free roll is Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Badoogie, Chris.
The worst game known to man.
You know I'm going to be rushing through our Poker 101 course at Derby Lane that night so I can get home to try to win a seat in the 12,000-player free roll.
I prefer Omahoogie.
Omahoogie, very good, very good. Well, a lot of good stuff going on when we're on the cruise, Chris. How do we play on that?
What?
We're on the cruise, and we're missing all this good stuff. We obviously didn't plan.
No, we're not good planners.
Are you pulling a Gundam on me here, thinking that you don't really understand what I'm saying, even though you do?
No, I understand. I also understand that we have a lot of things piling up on the Ante Up news desk.
All right. The American Gaming Association, which has opposed online gaming in the past, is changing its mind, Card Player reports. President and CEO Frank Fahrenkopf now believes that internet gaming can be regulated properly, assuming a, quote, tough regulatory framework is used.
Well, the first problem with this is they have a president and CEO.
Yeah, I know. That always drives you crazy.
Drives you crazy. He's CEO. That's all there is to it. You're not a black and brown belt in karate. You're a black belt.
It's kind of like when Lee Childs uses either in an either-or situation in the column. Burns my toast.
But I do like this. It seems like every week we lose one support system and then we gain another one. It's really interesting, but I'm glad this is coming up. And, of course, tough regulatory framework, duh. Yeah. No, we're just going to...
never said we shouldn't. That's why we want it.
It's going to be anarchy. You're going to have everybody run rampant and start their own gambling websites with no framework at all for regulating it. All right, well, you know what, Scott? We're setting history today. We have our first audio news desk item.
Awesome.
Annie Upper, Don Lawson of the Geeks on Poker podcast, which you've been on there, right?
Yeah. I'm a frequent guest on there. They do a good job covering poker up in Kentucky.
Yeah, he's based there, and he tells us what the state's Supreme Court did last week.
This is Don Lawson from Geeks on Poker. Last Thursday, the Kentucky Supreme Court ruled that iMega and IDC does not have the authority to act on behalf of the 141 gaming domain registrants that's involved in the case of the state of Kentucky trying to seize those gaming domains and gambling devices to prevent them from operating in Kentucky. Basically what this means is people are still able to play online in Kentucky and across the country. They do have to present themselves in court to defend themselves. They have 20 days to rule with the Court of Appeals, and iMega has said that they've got somebody volunteering to do that. So we'll look forward to that, and as soon as we have more information on that, we'll let you know. Check geeksonpoker.com for more information. Back to Scott and Chris.
Well, you know, I'm glad that Don called in because I read a couple stories on this, Chris, and I couldn't make heads or tails over what
really?
This means.
Jeez.
And every story was vastly different. It's like, you know, watching the healthcare reform debate on Fox News and then switching to MSNBC. The story is completely different on both of them. But yeah, so, you know, it seems like some people are calling this a victory for online poker, that there's some... The court is at least interested in hearing it, and other people say, no, we've succeeded. The online poker rooms are not going to come out of the woodwork, so I don't know. We'll see what happens, and hopefully Don calls in and keep us straight on it in the future.
We'll call him our Wildcat reporter.
Oh, I like that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You can add Wildcat to your little player description.
Yes.
Somebody that plays like Sandra Bullock. Speak. All right, finally, Chris, you remember a few weeks back when those wacky senior citizens had their clubhouse poker game raided by Idaho police, don't you?
Yes.
Well, it turns out lawmakers in that state realized that the arcane law that led to that raid was outdated, surprise, and quickly and nearly unanimously voted to change it. I think there's one person objected to both bodies. I guess what the deal was here is that it put the onus on the prosecuting attorney, you know, the Sam Watterson of Idaho.
Yeah.
And if they got wind of any potentially illicit gambling, that they were responsible to send somebody out to investigate it. So when you hear Grandpa say, hey, you know, I won $6 in the weekly poker game this week, you know, boom, they got to send the SWAT team out.
Oh,
so they changed
man.
The law now to, you know, let the prosecuting attorney do what he feels is justified. So not sending the SWAT team out for everything, but maybe if somebody's got a 10,000, 20,000 no-limit game with guns and drugs and whores, maybe at that point you send the SWAT team out.
I wish Florida could overturn their laws that quickly.
Yeah, I know. It's like overnight almost.
I know.
It's like they went to FedEx.
It's like those guys on that Nextel commercial with the automatic, like, walkie-talkie phones. You know, it's like, $100 buy-in in Florida? It sucks. Okay, change it. Okay, click, you know, and it's done. Same thing, they should be doing that here. Okay, let's listen to our hotline clip. This comes from Dan. And remember, if you call 813-448-1120 and we use it, we'll give you something. Let's see what Dan has to say.
I just finished listening to the Friday PokerCast, but it was the one with the guy from Poker Wars. That was a good show. I really enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.
Chris, I like this call because he likes the Antonio Panzari show. He seemed to really enjoy it, right?
Yeah.
And some folks on the forum are the opposite. Some of them thought, hey, Antonio is old school. It's a new poker out there. This guy, the game has passed this guy by.
Yeah.
And it's a good debate to have, you know, because obviously he is a little older, so he has his experience has been rooted in that. But it's nice to see that some people enjoyed it, too. You know, Chris, you're doing a good show when people both love and hate you at the same time.
Absolutely. It's like Howard Stern.
Yes, exactly.
People who love him listen 2 hours a day. People who hate him listen 4 hours a day. It's a true story. You know what, though? Antonio Panzari has not had a job since 1976. He's doing something right. That's all, yes, I got to say.
That is very true. That is very true. And Dan did something right by calling the hotline because we're going to send him a beautiful set of Texas Hold'em strategy cards from our sponsor, GreatPokerHands.com, and call him the hotline. And you, too, will get some wonderful, wonderful swag that we also give away in our mailbag.
Now, you know what I like about this show is we have a mailbag item on the mailbag show.
That's true.
Because we have give something away, but we don't want to give something to all the main topic mailbag people because we would be broke. So,
<That's right. laughs>
so we have a mailbag item within the mailbag. I like that.
Yeah, this one comes from George Riley, and he wrote in to say, you know, hey, he went to the Poker Stars frequent player point store, right, Chris?
Yeah.
Saw that he could get All In magazine and said, hey, what's up? I'd like to get Antioch magazine there. And, you know, I wrote back, you know, I'm like, hey, you know what? That's a good point. We never even thought about that. We could, we'll probably shoot some emails off, see what's involved in it, too. But, you know, it's probably important for our readers to know a little under-the-hood business stuff here.
Yeah.
That All In magazine, you probably don't see it in your local poker room very often because their model is based almost purely on subscription sales and per copy, you know, selling them at the airport and Barnes & Noble and things like that. So
right.
It stands to reason that they would be pushing this kind of approach where, you know, our magazine, of course, is free.
Yep.
Pick it up any of the great casinos that we send it out to, or you can even read it online for free, too.
Yep.
But we'll see what we can do to get Antioch prominently featured in the Poker Store store.
That would be cool,
wouldn't it?
I feel like we made it. If some large entity like Poker Stars is offering our magazine to their players for their point system, I feel like we actually have made it.
All right. That's what it's going to take to make you feel like you made it.
So push hard for me, buddy.
I will get on the little phone and make up some ringy dings this week and see what we can come up with.
All right,
George, we appreciate you sending it in, and we are going to send you a $10 staking package from GetAStake.com that will help you get more time on PokerStars, our tremendous sponsor.
All right, well, we are going to solve a mystery today. Of course, there are two mysteries this week. One, the actual hand. Two, what the hell the name of this case is. Because we don't know, and we're not going to solve it today because we don't know what the hell he's saying. But,
I listened to it like 40 times. I'm still going to get it out.
But let's see what happens in part one again, and then we'll react.
Greetings. This is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com. And this is another one-minute mystery. The Case of the Lycanthrope. Okay, it's the Daily No Limit MTT, and we are early, early in the tournament.
Sir, could I have a moment of your time?
Folds around to me in middle position with the Ace of Diamonds, Queen of Clubs. And being first to act, I raise it up 3x to 120 with 6,000 behind. folds right around to the big blind, who calls 80. The flop is the two of diamonds, the six of spades, and the ace of hearts. Then the big blind comes out betting 260. His range is wide here, and with top pair, I feel like I have to call rather than raise. With a well above average stack, I'm not looking to build a big pot right now. Turns to king of diamonds, and now the big blind again bets out pot 780. I must admit I'm having trouble putting him on a hand here, and again I call. Not thrilled with it, but that's what happened. The river's at six of clubs, and now I have aces up with a king kicker. But our big blind bets out pot again, 2,000. Seems like a simple fold, right? And what do you put him on here?
All right, Chris, you know what? I always go first. I'm going to let you go first today.
All right? I'm going to go first.
I'm tired of going first. The view never changes when I'm... Well, no, it does. The view doesn't change for you. Dag.
I am totally prepared for this. I am ready to go first. Here's the deal. Why aren't we raising on the flop? That's the thing. I don't understand why the call. Is it because he wasn't afraid of the board? But if somebody bets into us, I have to think we have the best hand at this point. So why aren't we raising and defining his hand? You know, if this guy has a pocket pair like queens or something, or well, queens wouldn't be likely, kings or jacks or something like that, or if he hits the six or has a weaker ace, we're going to find out if we raise. But we don't raise, and the call is weak. And I think the opponent is taking it that way. And, you know, I know the opponent knows that we don't have a draw, so that betting means something. It means he has a hand. He's not betting to make us put down our draw, because he knows we're not raising or whatever with 3-4 or 4-5 here, and it's a rainbow flop, so he knows we're not drawing, so his betting means something. It means he has a hand, and since we didn't raise in a flop, you know, I think we have to fold the turn now. I think at that point, we could be behind, and we have no information at all, so I think we're behind, and I'm folding on the turn, and I think that it was a poor flop bet. I don't think we should have called. I think we should have raised.
Wow. See, I'll let you go first because you took my thunder, and I know I normally take your thunder, which is crazy that we agree so often on Women of Mysteries anymore, isn't it?
I took your thunder? Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I took it. It's kind of weak. Stole it.
I stole
my thunder.
I stole. There,
that's better. That's better. No, I mean, here's the thing. You're right. I mean, first of all, I think early in a deep stack tournament, blinds are going to call with a wide range of hands rather than later in the tournament.
Yeah.
So we didn't get any action. I mean, really information pre-flop. You know, a lot people are going to call all kinds of stuff. But now when he bets out on the flop, I think this is someone either taking a stab that we don't have an ace and that we'll fold, that the ace is a scared card for us.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they could be an ace with a smaller kicker than us, or some other kind of hand that has us beat. So we don't really know. And you're right, by not raising on the flop, we still don't know. It's a wasted bet, I think.
Absolutely. It feels like this person is looking for information and we didn't give it to them. And now we're giving them a chance to beat us.
Exactly. So, you know, so now they bet out again. We don't know where we are. We've lost control of this hand, Chris, which is what you said so eloquently. And, you know, when you lose control of the hand, now you're guessing. And poker is not a game that you want to be guessing too often in. So, you know, and I think I said this before, this kind of scenario before, and I just want to keep the forum crazies off me here. I'm not suggesting that you always have to raise on the flop when you make a continuation bet, but understand what happens when you don't.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you might want to slow play, hey, my ace is probably good, I'll let him. But, you know, when they come back at you in the turn, you've lost control of that now. So, you know, either S or get off the pot.
S. I think we're cleared to say poop.
Okay. All right. So poop or get off the pot. At that point, you know, if you were trying to slow play and trap your guy, then, you know, hey, spring into action now. But, you know, it's risky. I just understand the risk involved in doing that. So,
yeah.
So we have no information. So you got to fold here, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, and again, I do see situations where I would just call because I was confident that I had the best hand. But, you know, I just think once he bets again on the turn, now we've got to really wonder. So in this instance, I would have bet on the flop. I would have raised. So let's see what happens.
Welcome back. A lot of questions running through my head. Did he flop top two? Did the river make him think his kicker didn't matter? Did he have 7-6 and get insanely lucky on the river? Was it ace-king the entire way? To be honest here, I probably should have folded the turn.
You said it.
I figured if I called and he bet anything, I was folding the river. And if he checked the river, I would check behind with a hand with showdown value. But now, with that large river bet, this became way too dangerous for my holdings. As a matter of fact, it's a peppered beef bet. Only a stray dog would call it. Still, I'm going to make a mistake on purpose here. Not because I think I'm right. Quite frankly, I think I'm wrong. But I really want to learn from this hand. I want to know what the heck this guy had that he was willing to bet this way. I make a very rare academic-only call, like that poor sidewalk guy in the Dirty Harry movie, and he shows king-king for a full house. Wow. Turn set. Still, ace-king would have been good too. Until next time, this is Columbo reminding you to avoid the curiosity call. Unless you really need to know.
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Chris is always one of our favorite shows, the Mailbag Show.
I love the mail. You know what I love most about the Mailbag Show is I forget that we have that option.
Yeah.
And then when it comes up, I'm like, yes, a mailbag show.
It's like the statue of the annexation of Puerto Rico play. The mailbag, for those folks that don't know what we have been doing, because we have the mailbag every week now, right? So
yeah.
we save up some of these mailbags for folks that have already emailed once and already got some swag. And they ask good questions, but we don't want to dominate the show with these folks. So we save them for a mailbag. And so all of these folks today, Chris, are official swag winners previously. Which is a very nice way of saying don't expect anything today.
Very politically correct way of saying tough.
All right, our first question comes from Jeff Price. I believe he's from West Virginia, Chris. And he says, hey, guys. Hey, Jeff. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
I keep hearing Columbo mention the M and the Q in his 1 Minute Mysteries. What is he talking about? How does he figure it out? And why is it useful?
Well, I'm going to take this one because I know you don't know math.
Beautiful. Yes, I've got a bumper sticker that proves it.
I have to say that I'm guilty of never really considering these things because I really don't play a lot of tournament poker anymore. But the M or the M ratio, that is the it basically measures how many times you can survive rotations in the tournament throughout your table. So, in other words, how much is it going to cost? For every rotation, you add the small blind, the big blind, and if there's antes at the time, you add that in, and you divide that into your stack number. Now, we'll take a nice round number. Let's say the small blind, the big blind, the antes equal, I don't know, 230, and your stack is 2,300. Your M would be 10, okay? That's what the M ratio is. Because the blinds would be 50 and 100 with an ante of 10 at a full table, or at least a table of 8. And you'd have a M ratio of 10. Now, what makes this important, and by the way, this was all pretty much invented by a poker pro named Paul McGrill, and maybe that's where the M comes from, I guess. And he also is the backgammon like guru who wrote like a backgammon book, and just a genius, this guy. Kind of weird looking, but he's a great guy. And
we're all weird looking.
Anyway, the person who embraced this M the most, I think, was Dan Harrington. He made it really famous in his little Harrington on Hold'em series, especially volume 2. And he says, and there are certain zones that you're in where there are certain actions, optimal actions or strategies that you should follow regarding your M. So, for instance, if your M is, I would say, greater than 1 but less than 6, he used to call that, or he still does, I guess, the red zone, where he says you can only move all in here or fold. You can't call anything like that. You have to move all in or fold. And then the higher you go, the more, you know, chances you can take with your stack. And the lower your M goes, you know, you're dead. So basically, and then also like other pros now have embraced it with their camps. Like Vanessa Russo has her own theories on M's and where you what you should do with specific levels. And if you want to find that out, you have to take her course. But that's what the M is. I don't want to spend too much time on this. I'm sorry, but the Q is a much less important thing. That's basically where your stack plays in ratio to the average stack of the tournament player. So if your answer is less than 1, you're a below average chip stack, and if you're more, it's just the Q is like it's a real big pain in the butt to figure out really nothing, you know. It's like, you know, if you're higher than average, you're higher than average. If you're lower than average, you're lower than average. And it's a real crappy freaking... It's like, take your chips, divide them by the starting chips, multiply them by the current number of players, divided by... You know, you're sitting at the table. How are you going to do all that? You pull out your iPhone, use the calculator, and you get a 10-minute penalty because you used your phone. So, really, just look at what your stack is, find out what the average stack is, and know where you are. But really, I don't ever use the Q. Sometimes I use the M, but for the most part, you know, you can just look at your stack and know if you're screwed. So, but that's what the Q and the M are.
That's what I do. I look down, oh my gosh, I let myself get short stacked. The people in the podcast are going to flame me for this. Then I shove. I mean, that's Scott Long tournament poker.
That's the S ratio.
The S ratio, yes.
All right, I hope I answered that properly.
You did very well. You did very well. And we can put some links on the forum and the show can recap to help folks better explain it, probably.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, yeah, I think there's some good stuff on Wikipedia about it, believe it or not. You know, and of course, people are listening to our show. They actually have internet, so we know that they could just type M ratio poker or Q ratio poker and find their answer that way, too. So we'll give you some links. But I'll take the next letter now. This comes from Daniel Bridges in New Zealand. He said he's only played in a few casinos, Sydney, Auckland, Christchurch. And so his knowledge of different card rooms is very limited. Christchurch, he says, he found was really good. The staff was friendly. Auckland, however, consistently disappoints this guy. The staff seems to have no interest in visitors that aren't, you know, regulars. They aren't there all the time. And he likes to go there every couple of months. And every time he goes, he said it's impossible to get good service. So he said dealers are good, but it's the frontline staff that really sets the tone. And unfortunately, he said it's quite a daunting and unfriendly place when the locals rule and they're not worried about making anyone else welcome. He said, God, would a smile kill them? And he wants to know if it's like that in the States. Do we come across that here in the States?
Well, here's the thing. I think Dan will find this out as he travels more and sees the number of rooms out there. It really does go room to room. Yeah. So, I mean, the hard answer to this question is, I don't know, yes for common, but yes, you're going to run into rooms here in the States that cater to locals and really don't understand basic business concepts of welcoming folks and thinking about repeat customers other than the folks that they see every day. So there are some rooms that you'll find that aren't really interested in your business. They're interested in the business they already have, and that's fine. And then there's lots of other rooms that will go out of the way to make you feel welcome. So it really is kind of a crapshoot, I guess.
Yes. And it's interesting, you know, a lot of the staff that isn't dealing to you, they don't get tipped, you know what I mean? So they're the ones that are truly, if they're nice to you, they're truly nice people, regardless. And it's the dealers that are the ones that see you day in and day out and are working for tips on you, you know what I mean? Some of the staff situations probably do have, so they get tips or whatever. But generally, your action or their reaction to you, you know, isn't going to really put money in their pocket. So if they're nice people, they're nice people, and if they're not, they're not. And you'll find that with all walks of life, not just casinos. So, but yeah, I mean, I've come across it where I remember there's a guy up at Foxwoods guy named Noah, who was a great dealer, and I've only played there a handful of times since I moved here, but every time I go back, somehow I see him. He's either a floor guy at some times or he's a dealer, and he remembers me. And I'm like, that's incredible. I mean, you have that, you know, some person like that up there where they just care about, you know, remembering their clients and stuff, then you're going to come across that. And other guys don't even care who you are, so whatever.
Very good. All right, let's move on. Question from Zach Kessin, Chris.
Okay.
And he says, I have an old silver dollar from 1883, so better swag than we give out. and he wants to use it as a card protector, Chris. But he wants to know if he puts it on the table to use as a card protector, will anyone think it's money and that it's actually in play, or will it be pretty obvious that it's just a card protector?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. But if you're in a casino, no one's playing dollars anyway, so you don't have to worry about it there because you have to play chips. Only chips play are $100 bills, so
right.
You don't have to worry about it there. And then in a home game, you know, they're your buddies. They're not going to take your 1883 silver dollar. So
I think they might.
Well, I think you're safe. You know, I mean, a lot of our guys in our home game have like coins from other countries, and I want to call the converter rate up and say, well, I think that crony that you pulled out is probably worth, you know, X amount. So no, but I think he's safe to use as a card protector, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of ridiculous to do this, but I always offer it just so folks are protected. I mean, when you go into a new room, you know, you always want to ask about any weird rules or different rules they might have there or things like that. Anyhow, so, you know, if you've got this and you're worried about it, you might at that point when you get your chips and ask the brush, you know, hey, usually is it a car protector? Am I all right? And then you're a little bit more protected. But yeah, I can't imagine anybody ever thinking that an 1883 silver dollar is in play.
Well, it's a good question to ask because you just don't know. Especially if you don't play a lot live, you don't realize that only chips play and only big bills play. So it's a good thing to know. Okay, this comes from Matt Moody. He says, "Where I live, there aren't a lot of options: casinos, card rooms, home games." For him, other than, you know, the weekly home games, well, with the same people. So he says that would something like Card Runners really improve his game and be worth his time? He wants to eventually play poker for a living, but he knows he hasn't had enough live experience to make the attempt right now. So he's wondering if an online training site would help his live play.
Well, I'll say this. There's a lot of them out there, and a lot of them still in business and doing well, so they must be doing something right.
Right.
I don't think people are just blindly paying this money for something that's not worth it. I mean, the key is to find the right one. He mentioned Card Runners. You know, you could also try our partner, DeepStacks.com. They've got a very interesting online module as well, too. But certainly, it's going to present situations to you that if you're not getting a lot of live experience, that are going to help you. But a lot of them are also kind of online-based.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of online rooms and stuff. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't transfer that to the live experience, but I'm not really aware of anybody that actually tapes, like, live home game kind of hands or live casino hands and breaks them down to kind of give you that live experience. So you're not going to get that experience, I don't think, from one of these, but certainly you're going to get some very good instruction and be able to, apply that when you actually sit down in a room wherever you go.
Yeah, a good poker player is a good poker player, whether he's playing online or playing live. I mean, look at some of the players look at Annette 15, Overstad. She couldn't play live forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what I mean? But once she was old enough, she's a great live player because she's a great player. So card runners and those types of things, deep stacks, they'll make you good players regardless if you're live or not. You know, and believe me, the learning curve live, you'll come around very quickly, especially since they deal so many hands so slowly that you'll have a lot of time to really absorb what's going on and not make make any mistakes. So no, I definitely think that systems like this, card runners or whatever, will help you make, you know, because you want to play for a living someday, so that will definitely make you a better poker player. All right. I love this next one. I love this next one, so I can't wait to answer this next question.
All right. It comes from Rich Smooth. I believe he's from Brooklyn. He's an Apes Banana winner.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. And he sent in a photo, unlike a lot of other people.
Yes, that's true. All right, he says, 2 weeks ago, of course, he sent this a long time ago. So.
Yeah.
But he says, a close friend invited him to his friend's home game. where they usually play 7 to 9 man sit and goes for $20 buy-ins. Bunch of nice guys, he says, Chris, but there's no doubt that they are not on Rich Schmoo's level of play because they don't play in apes, of course.
Of course. You know?
And he said the first time he played, they chopped with a guy. They split first and second money down the middle in game one. And he took down game two. Well played, Rich. Divided him back the next week, and he took down game one and went on the bubble on a bad beat in the second game. Well played, Rich. A few days later, they invite me back. Wow, this is great. During a pay-per-view boxing match, and they decided to play a $50 buy-in, and he took first. And then, charitably, Chris, he gave the host half the money for the cable bill.
Wow.
Very nice.
Yeah.
But he says, while playing, Chris, he noticed that some of the guys were upset that he was winning, and one even said to the friend who brought him, why do you keep bringing this guy?
Oh.
So he goes home. Rich goes home, tells his wife the next day that he won again, but he doesn't think that he's going to be invited back now since he keeps winning. And she said that if I do play with him again, that I should lose two of them so they wouldn't mind as much when I win. I told her, no way. If I'm running good, am I going to play hard and keep winning if possible? So what would you guys do in this sort of situation, Chris?
Dump.
Dump.
This man needs to lose. Okay, he's making way more money than everybody else. They're already getting upset. You do not want to upset the cash cow. You know, just like you show a bluff when you're playing cash games and you want to use that information later so that they think you're going to bluff and you're going to show a strong hand later and take a big pot. Same thing here. You don't want these guys thinking that you're going to constantly be better than them and winning. You know, this is... You've got to dump some money to them. Just like, you know, Worm had to dump to the Russians in Rounders because you don't want them to throw you out of this game. This is you're making some money. You want to stay. So let's say you win $100 one week and $100 next week. Next week, dump $20. How hard is that? You know, $50 buy-in, don't finish first. You know, intentionally finish third or second. You know, if you make the money, don't win it. Once in a while, do that to keep them around and say, okay, all right, so he's really not that good. He's got lucky a couple of weeks. Let them think you're lucky. But do not win every single week. They'll throw you out of the game. Now, if you're hosting the game, that's one thing because it's your game.
You could be playing by yourself. You can play solitaire.
Exactly. But, you know, in this instance, if you think that you can win consistently in this game, then lose once in a while to keep them to keep you around. Because I mean that's the way it goes. You always hear poker pros talking about that, where you let a guy win once in a while, otherwise he won't come back. He's not, you know, this is just in reverse. You know, now you've got five fish, and you want to let one of them. You know, you want to make sure that you're not winning all the time. Same thing. It's just in reverse.
All right, Chris, I'm going to disagree with you a little bit here.
Good.
Finally, we're at hour four of this show, and I'm going to finally disagree with you here. I understand what you're saying, and I know this happens in practice, but I've got a little bit of an ethical problem, not an illegal problem, an unethical problem with purposely dumping a tournament or taking a dive. Now, what I would suggest, and again, you call me a little, I don't know, little wide-eyed innocent kid fresh off the bus from Iowa here, but... you know, I don't like the dump. So what I would suggest is either one, just give up on this game. I mean, he's making money at it, so that's a reason not to give up on it. But I can't imagine he's really being challenged in this game either, right, Chris?
Uh-huh.
And so I don't think he's going to become a better poker player by playing in this game. Now, if he has other outlets that he's improving his game on and this is just a way to pay the bills, that's different. But, you know, if this is his regular game now, you know, he's not going to get any better playing against these players. But if he wants to stay in the game, rather than purposely dump or take a dive, what I would suggest is kind of mix up your game, play a different style, and work on some stuff that you wouldn't really try in a game that you're up against players that are on your same level. Almost like practicing with play money.
Huh.
And if you happen to lose, well, great. Now you're serving the purpose that you have already. You know, these folks are winning some money. They're going to keep inviting you back. And then you can always shift gears later on. You know, next week, win a lot. And the next week, work on it. You know, if you keep winning, then, you know, hey, you keep winning and you're working on stuff and become even a better player that way. So that is how I would approach it.
Okay. Well, we'll agree to disagree. Because, I mean, it's like the cornerstone of all poker players who play for a living. They go into a soft game and they lose intentionally once in a while so they can keep going, get invited back. So I mean,
I don't know so much about that. I totally agree that, you know, when you said that, you know, there's a fish in the game, because that's how pros work. I mean, they got out on their Blackberries. Oh my God, the rich guy's in town and
the whale
catch planes to get there and get in that game and lines out the door. But that's different than going to a game when everybody is like that and then, you know, dumping every once in a while. Now, again, I'm not saying you're a bad person if you want to do that, but personally, in my ethical little ethos, I would try to be a little more creative about it.
Oh, creative's good. Creative's always good. Okay, our last letter comes from Michael. Since a terrible run last year in Vegas and Mohegan Sun, he's had no desire to play. He says, well, of course, this hasn't stopped me from listening to the greatest poker podcast ever, which is ours.
Excellent, Mike.
It's like a switch has been turned off. He says he's sure part of it is psychological from how poorly he played in Vegas, but he's never exceeded his bankroll and has always enjoyed playing in the past, even when he's played poorly. But now he wants to know, how can he rekindle the poker flame?
Well, yeah, we get this question often, actually, and the reason I include it again is just because I think it's so important, because this happens to a lot of our listeners and a lot of players in general. I mean, you run bad, and then you get a little upset, and so I think some of the advice we've given in the past is, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking a break.
All right.
There's lots of other cool stuff to do in this world besides poker. I mean, take a break, and in fact, I think he's doing exactly what I would do, is take a break, but still keep it in your ears in poker by listening to a podcast or reading a book or watching TV or something like that. So you're not giving up on the game, but you're taking a break from the actual playing of it and kind of focusing on either getting better or more strategy or just the fun of poker. You know, it doesn't have to be something serious where you're trying to learn, just remembering why the game is so much fun. And then at some point, that itch is going to come back, and you're going to probably be in a better mindset to actually play well.
Yeah, and the other thing sometimes we recommend, too, is maybe go step down in levels and play a different game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because maybe you're always playing Hold'em and you're bored with it, too, or you're just not playing it well and you need to take a break from it. Try something different. Try a stud game. Try an Omaha game. You know, just maybe that will make you excited again, because it's a game you don't normally play and you've discovered this game and now you want to learn all you can about it, and that'll rekindle the flame. So maybe try a different game, too, if the break isn't working for you.
Excellent advice, my friend.
Excellent.
We agreed on everything except for the...
The dumping. I can handle that. I can live with that.
You like to take dumps, I don't. So, you know.
I can handle that. So let's just say thank you to all of our listeners who sent us letters. And now we got ourselves a hand of the week.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Hand of the week this week, Chris, comes from Andrew from Joshua Tree, California.
Ooh, you with or without you.
I've never been to Joshua Tree, have you?
No, I've been to California.
It's a tree, right? It's not a twee.
It's a tree, not a twee. And I've been to California like once, and it was because my plane's engine blew, and we had a land emergency in L.A., So, no, I've never been to Joshua Tree or Twee.
Okay, I kind of want to go just to call it Josh Tree, see whether he's cool, you know, or insist on the formal Joshua Tree.
Joshua.
All right, so this is a No Limit Hold'em online hand, Chris, from a little tournament series you might have heard of called Apes.
Apes.
Always like when we get hands from Apes, and usually we get them like rapid fire on the night of Apes. Hey, can you believe this hand? Spawn back. Yeah, I guess that's tough. Thanks. Every once in a while, they're actually a real good hand. So here's the situation. It was level 3, and I believe this was the event number 3, our third event this year.
Okay.
Looking around the table, we have a short stack of 800 in chips. We have a big stack of 3740, and everybody else is in the 2000s.
Okay.
All right, we're at the 25-50 level, and under the gun calls, a couple folds, another caller, and we look down at ace of spades, king of clubs, Chris.
Okay.
What do we do?
Oh, we have two callers?
We have two callers, yes. And the under the gun and under the gun plus three.
And what are we? Are we the button?
We are under the gun plus four. Let's see. We have we're in the hijack seat, it appears.
Okay. Not the low jack.
Not the low jack. The hijack.
Not the jack in the box. No, I'm going to raise it up as opposed to raising it down.
Yes. Yeah, I hate when we raise it down.
And I'm going to make it 250.
250 to go.
Because we got two limpers already. So if I was going to make it 150, I'm going to add their limps in. So I'll make it 250 to go.
You know, I like that. I've been doing that a lot. I mean, it's kind of the thing that you've been told that that's probably a good thing to do. You know, you do your three x-rays, and if you have limpers, add it to it. But I haven't really done it religiously, and I started doing it now, and it does pay dividends. It's, oh, gosh, it's like the as-seen-on-TV products. It really works. So I am in total agreement with you, partner, on this.
Okay.
Our hero here decides to raise 155 to 205. So a little slightly more than 3X, so.
Okay.
That's but not, still that's not, a significant raise.
Yeah, it's not a mistake, but I'm just saying what I would have done. But that's not really a mistake. I guess that's enough to define other people's hands, maybe.
Okay, it works to get the button and the two blinds out of the way, but our two callers come along with it, Chris.
Oh, man.
It's not big enough to scare them.
Okay, so our callers call, so we've got about 615 in the pot or so.
Sure, why not? Okay. 615. Very good.
Okay, two callers.
615. Well, actually, no, 615 plus the blinds, so.
Oh, okay, so about 650 or so. 660, 70. All right, so 690.
All right, the flop comes. Four of spades, seven of hearts, three of spades. Our two opponents check to us.
Well, since we are always saying that we want to look for information, I mean, I don't mind checking here, but it would just seem weird since we are in position, we took control of the hand, and this is a typical flop that doesn't hit anybody. So
particularly because the blinds aren't in the hand. If the blinds are in the hand, this is a much different story, I
yeah,
think.
Since these guys willingly entered the pot and put more money in when we raised, I can't put them on any of these cards. So I'll make a bet of like, I would say 500. Maybe 450, 500, something like that. 400, somewhere around there.
All right, I like that. I mean, as we mentioned, the one-minute mystery, I don't like checking here, particularly when it gets two opponents. And there's two spades on the board, and, you know, I was the aggressor pre-flop. I'm going to put it in another bet here and see whether that's good enough to get it down, and if not, then I'll get some more information out of it, right?
Absolutely. We've got to make a bet.
All right, our hero bets 375, very similar to what you suggested.
Yep.
The under-the-gun player, initial under-the-gun player calls, but we get rid of the other player. So we're heads up going to the turn.
Well, that call is scary because it's either a draw or they have a pair now. So,
and remember, it's in the under-the-gun player too. So
yeah, so I'm not going to get crazy here. I mean, if the turn doesn't help me at all, I'm going to shut it down. I'm just letting you know, whatever happens on the turn, I'm shutting it down.
Gotcha. All right. Here comes the turn. It is the tray of diamonds. So the board now is four of spades, seven of hearts, tray of spades, tray of diamonds, board pairs, and our remaining opponent bets into us 450.
Done.
Yep.
I am done with the hand. This person easily has something like a suited ace that hit the seven, a small pocket pair because of the way they limped, and then called. They're trying to hit a set. So they could have a set. They could have something like fives or sixes, and they have a draw and a pair. Or they could have a flush draw, but since they bet into me on the turn, that would be really tricky.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm done with this hand now.
Well, again, we have ace high.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I know Gambit gets up mad at me when I call ace king a drawing hand, but it's essentially hand. I mean, we put it in a nice bet pre-flop because it's a strong hand. We missed the flop, so we had to make our standard continuation bet. Maybe that bet to get people out. But when we get a caller and then we don't improve on the turn, I mean, our hand is ace high.
And then they bet into us.
Yeah.
Our hand is ace high.
just not much to like about this unless you want to get crazy and kind of re-raise and try to push, maybe think that this guy is making a move on us now. But now you're into like that eighth level thinking. And
yeah, I know.
Who has time for that online?
I'm definitely folding here with the ace-king now. I mean, you have six outs, really, essentially. Your ace-king can't be good unless you're going to try to bluff the river, which a lot of people will do. they'll call to set up a bluff on the river, but and not very often in Apes. So,
but it's gonna be tough because you know this person, unless they're just making a stab, which doesn't add up to the how the hands played out. They're gonna put a healthy bet in on the river, and if you're gonna make a stab, you're gonna have to raise that. So you're putting a lot of money on the river.
Yeah,
with ace high. So.
So I'm done with the hand, but clearly our hero isn't.
Yes, our hero decides to call, and the river is the nine of diamonds. So our final board is four of spades, seven of hearts, tray of spades, tray of diamonds, nine of diamonds, and our lone opponent checks into us now, Chris.
Checks. That's clearly a check call mode. This person has no intention of folding. They just want to keep the pot small and see what you're going to do. I mean, if I wanted to bluff at it, my God, there's what, not 6, 7, 13, 1,400 in the pot now? I mean, what am I going to do? Put my whole stack in there? 50% of my stack? There's just no way.
And our whole stack right now is 495, so.
Yeah, so to shove on this hand, when if I have 500, I still have 10 big blinds. So I'm just going to check behind and see if maybe he was on a draw and my ace-king will win. God, there's no way I'm betting here.
Well, and here's the thing, too. If you bet, too, I mean, the bet is not significant enough to really, with that kind of pot.
No, they'd be getting 4-1 on their money. Yeah, they'd be getting 4-1.
If they have anything that beats you, they're going to call, I would think.
Yep.
But that little money. I mean, it'd be different if you had 5,000. You could make a nice significant bet. But the 495 just isn't. I would save the money for bus fare. Hope I get lucky, like you said. And if not, you know, I still got 10 blinds.
Yeah, this
is. We'll go to war again later on.
This can't be a drawing hand that they were up against because he would not have bet the turn on a draw. That turn does not help his draw, and like if he was in a spade draw or a straight draw, there's no way that this guy's on a draw now. He's got to have a made hand like a small pair, or even he could have A7 of clubs or something. And so I think we're beat, and we have to check and just move on and find a good hand to get it all in later.
All right. Well, we move all in.
Oh,
our last 495. Our opponent calls, of course, and turns over.
Am I supposed to guess? Oh, okay.
Six. That's all right. You've already guessed it. Six of clubs, six of spades.
Yes.
For two pair with the pair on board, and takes down the pot, and boom, we're out.
Yep, and that totally makes sense. Limp with sixes, hoping to hit a set. Call a nominal raise. Have all small cards, and you have a draw. Bet on the turn because the turn didn't scare you because the same card's already on there. And then check call on the river. It's exactly the way it makes sense. Sixes, pocket sixes. Yep.
Yep, yeah. And of course, it's a twist this week, Chris. This hand was told through the villains.
Oh, you
frame of reference. So Andrew from Joshua Tree. Twee. I keep saying Twee. Parents would give me speech therapy when I was a kid. Andrew from Joshua Tree was the pocket sixes in his hand.
Ah.
Very well played.
I like the way he played it.
Yeah, of course, the calling the raise, pre-flop, he got a little out of line with that. But, hey, it's early in the tournament. I mean, he had 2,100 to start. He just had to call, that's about 10%, right?
Yeah, about 10%.
Which is probably the line.
Yeah.
And, but then he got aggressive afterwards. He didn't hit his set, which is probably what you'd be looking for in that situation, and took down a pretty nice pot and knocked a player out, which is always important in Apes.
And actually, too, he limped early, so he already had 50 out there, so he only had to call another 150 more, so that's not 10%. So I agree with it. I think it was a good call.
All right, Andrew, we appreciate you sending in the hand, and we will be happy to send you a deck of J Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com. They are the official playing cards of Ante Up, and enjoy those. And folks, send us some more hands of the week to podcast@anteupmagazine.com, and you too can win valuable, valuable swag.
Man, it was another good show. I want to thank all of our listeners for their letters, and it's always great to, because a lot of the stuff always inspires me, too, rekindling the poker flame. It's just great, great stuff. So thanks for sending in those letters. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. contact us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Okay, I'll set us up, and I'll ask the first question.
Okay. In words. I know the Q and the M stuff, so pretty.
Yeah, that's
pretty
why
solid.
I put it that way.
Okay. All right, cool.
Those who do not know math don't know math. Is that what the bumper sticker said?
Yeah, very, very similar.
Hand of the week this week, Chris, comes from Andrew from Joshua Tweet.
All right, long pause again. Joshua Tweet. Oh, my God.